This is Mitch McGarry of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht, and with me is the best Thunder writer in the whole internet, Royce Young. Royce, how are you doing?
I love my intros. Great.
So you're in Toronto for the Thunder's perhaps maybe their eighth win in a row. This team has been really good lately. They've also had some luck with obviously the Spurs and then the Celtics without Jay Crowder. But they've won seven games in a row. Have you noticed anything different about this team during the seven-game stretch? Have they, like, turned a corner, or is it just the opponents that they're playing?
I don't necessarily know that they've turned a corner. They're without question, playing better and more consistently throughout the games. I think that, they came out of the All-Star break. They lost 8-12. There was a little bit of panic-ish feeling throughout the fan base. But, and I'm just speaking within the people within the organization, their perspective on the way that they were playing during that, they actually felt good about it. And I know that, wins and losses is what matters. And, that might be kind of sunshine pumping. But if you ask people within the organization, they said, yeah, we might have blown the game against the Warriors. We might have blown a game against the Clippers. We might have blown a game against the Pacers. But they felt like that they were doing things within those games that were really positive. And the only thing that they weren't doing right was they just weren't getting a win, which I know that's the most important part. But I do think that when you look at the NBA regular season, it's kind of, your own personal perspective on what you think the games mean necessarily. Are they a vehicle to try to improve yourself to the position where you're playing your very best going into the postseason? Or is the regular season about, trying to just, point blank win and lose games, improve your seed, and then, see how good you are? I think that it's obviously probably a combination of the two, but, the Thunder could have, I think that they honestly were probably playing worse basketball in December and winning games against lesser teams. And then they start playing better teams. And I think they actually have played better since the All-Star break. Their record just didn't necessarily reflect that. And now, I think that, like you pointed out, Andrew, they've caught some breaks here. They've beaten some good teams during this little run, but I do think that you're kind of seeing a product of maybe some of the things that they did, even when they were losing games against the Warriors, the Clippers, the Pacers, the whoever. I think you're seeing a product of some of that stuff kind of taking shape because, look at the way that they played against the Blazers. They poured it on them. Look at the way, they played against the Jazz, really poured it on them. And then obviously against the Spurs. And, I know the Spurs rested everybody, but the Spurs team that they put out on the floor, you could probably put them in the Eastern Conference, and they would probably win like 42 games or something, and maybe compete for the postseason. So it's not like that was just like the worst. That was Patty Mills, David West, Danny Green. There were some decent players out on the floor there. It's not like they were playing the 76ers or something.
Boban.
And Boban, of course, who is the best player in the NBA.
Obviously. What's it? Have you stood next to him?
I got kind of close to him. At the game the other night, not like directly next to him, but I was standing within his vicinity, and it was like he had his own atmosphere. It's like, I swear that guy, people have pointed out his hands. And yes, like the amazing thing about his hands are you can see him across the court. Like I was watching him warm up, an hour or two before the game, and you could see from like 90 feet away how massive his hands are. The most amazing thing about him is you look at him stand next to Steven Adams, and Steven Adams is a giant human.
Yeah.
And Steven Adams all of a sudden looks like he's like 6'8" or something.
You should have tried to give him a high five or shake his hand or something. Because I've shaken hands with Shaq before, and it's like such a strange feeling. It's like shaking hands with a bunch of bananas. I bet it would be a lot different or even like crazier with Boban.
It just makes you feel like a small little toddler or something. I feel like he would just like, if I shook his hand, it would be like accidental Chewbacca, and he'd just like rip my arm off.
It's very possible. We could have our own separate Boban podcast, but we'll maybe.
Why isn't there a Boban podcast?
I don't know. There's certainly a market for it. People love Boban. There's been a lot of talk throughout the season about Scott Brooks, and David Locke mentioned on the Dunked On Basketball podcast that he thinks that the Thunder definitely played harder under Scott Brooks than they do under Billy Donovan. Do you think that's true? And have you seen any evidence of this? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, look, I know that the Scott Brooks discussion is kind of an easy one. You can look at the way that the Thunder played under Brooks. You can look at the way that they played under Donovan. You know, I know that coaching is something in the NBA and really every sport. You know, it's the first thing you point at. It's the first thing you look at is, you talk about the coaching and what happened. To me, I look at it, a lot of the Thunder's problems more as, you know, what's the thing that hasn't really changed? It's the players, you know? So, like, you know, if you're talking about, oh, it's the same old issues, it's the same old things, it's, you know, Billy Donovan has made no difference from Scott Brooks. Was that a Billy Donovan problem or is that a personnel problem? And, you know, I think that Billy Donovan is certainly attempting to change some things. Now, there have been – Kevin Durant acknowledged it, this morning at Shootaround in Toronto, that there have been ups and downs with Billy Donovan throughout the season. They've had trouble adjusting, I think, to some of his defensive changes. They've had trouble I don't think they necessarily have had too much trouble, honestly, adjusting to the offensive changes. The offense, you know, when's the last time you heard somebody complain about the Thunder not moving the ball? I mean, that doesn't really happen anymore.
Right.
You can look at like something as raw as like passes per game, and yeah, the Thunder may rank dead last in that, but that's such a flawed stat, I think, to use as evidence of ball movement. Just mainly because, you know what happens when Russell Westbrook grabs a rebound and runs the court and gets a layup in 3 seconds? There's zero passes. Right. So, you know, do you want to be the Utah Jazz who take up, 21 seconds of their possession, but, you know, and may have 12 passes, but they end up with a long contested three? Or do you want to be the Thunder who maybe have one straight line drive from Russell Westbrook and a kick to the corner for Kevin Durant to hit a three? That's one pass, better shot. I mean,
there's a stat that I've been trying to tell people all season, and it's true facilitation passes that lead to open shots, and they're fifth in the league in those kind of passes. And in the past, they've been in the teens, even in the 20s. They never got in the top 10 under Scott Brooks.
And that's an excellent stat. You just look at this, just the eye test and just watching them play. Last year with Scott Brooks, you know, it was a lot of let's get into our offense. The Thunder, I don't know what the numbers are, but they probably ran pick and roll 75% of the time under Scott Brooks. And now the Thunder are a team that they do move the ball. It goes from side to side quite often. They'll put a big man, whether it's Adams, Kaner, or Ibaka, and they'll run a dribble handoff at the top of the key, or they'll just move the ball from side to side. And that's what Billy Donovan believes in. He believes in moving the defense because, in today's NBA – the way that defenses work, where they try to use the Tom Thibodeau, Tom Thibodeauization of the league, where you try to you try to build a wall and you bury your teams into, a corner, and you try to use the sideline as, your extra defender. The way to defeat that, and Billy Donovan, I think, believes this correctly, is to, have the ball on one side of the floor, move it to the middle of the floor, and then move it to the other side of the floor and then counter action. And that kind of prevents that. And the Thunder do that a lot more than they ever had. And yes, they still isolate because of course they isolate. They have two of the best isolation players in the entire world. But the one thing that has been described to me is that Billy Donovan has tried to kind of add another pitch to the arsenal. That they don't just have a 97 mile an hour fastball, which was Durant and Westbrook isolating at you and just attacking. And that's what they had in the past. They had the best fastball in the game. But you throw four straight fastballs to Mike Trout and he's probably going to get a hold of one. And that's what would happen to the Thunder in the past is that you keep throwing that fastball against the Spurs, against the whoever. Eventually they're going to catch up to you. So now you've got now the Thunder have a little bit of an off speed pitch. They can play a certain style for the first 43 minutes of a game and score points and score efficiently. And they can transition into maybe the isolation game later when they need to. And I think that keeps opposing defenses off balance a lot more. I mean, just look at the way Durant scored. Durant has scored the ball easier this season than he ever has in his whole career. I mean, I don't think it's – he is not battling and just – trying to work his butt off to get 32 points in the game. When he's scoring, he's honestly scoring less big number games because he's scoring so much easier. So I don't know. I don't know if that answers the question, but I think that yes, the Thunder still have some of the same problems under Billy Donovan. Yes, they still are battling through some of that stuff because it's the first season under him, and some old habits die really, really hard. And I'm not going to sit here and say. I mean, I thought that Scott Brooks deserved another chance. with this team. I understand why they made the move to go to Billy Donovan. And I'm not going to sit here and say that Billy Donovan's fixed it and that he's without blame and that you can't point a finger at him ever. But I kind of see this low-hanging fruit to just say, oh, they're no different than they were under Scott Brooks. I think they're a good amount different. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know that that's going to translate. Scott Brooks rallied the team really, really well. I mean, they played in a way, night in and night out, where they played hard and they played with passion. And that's something Durant's talked about a decent amount this year, is that they don't necessarily always play with the joy and the fire and the passion. And maybe that's also because they only have four players left off the 2012 finals team. The core of this team has changed dramatically. They've only got Ibaka, Collison, Westbrook, and Durant. After that, it's all new. So I think that might have something to do with it as well.
Yeah, I think some of that passion, too, may come from expectations. Like, the more expectations are put on you, like, it's probably a little bit harder to summon that, because whenever you're kind of this underdog, young, up-and-coming team that nobody believes in you, right. I think that's a lot easier to summon that rather than,
so they've got a target on their back now.
Yeah. As far as them, like, being different or not playing harder, I think that there are some noticeable differences, like, in the way that they play defense that maybe look like they're playing, that looked like they were playing harder under Brooks, but it's just a schematic change rather than them actually like being like a worse defense, because their defense is actually shown to be the numbers show to be a little bit better than 2013-14. Their points against per shot this year are 0.96, and in 13-14 they were 0.98. But one of the biggest differences that I found there's a stat called pressure rate, and they were in like the top 10 in pressure rates, basically how close you are to your man. Basically on the perimeter, because you're always around your guy in the paint. And they're dead last this season. And then also in passes denied, they're 29th. And just last year, they were fourth in the league. So
they don't create turnovers really anymore, which is, which I think is indicative of what you're saying. I don't think that they are as aggressive defensively. I think that, sitting where I sit during games, I hear Billy Donovan yell it all the time when a guy kind of gambles. Like Westbrook sort of gambles, or if Waiters try to get kind of gambles for a steal, reaches in, you'll hear Billy Donovan yell. He'll jump up and yell. He'll yell, solid, solid, solid. He just wants them, just stay solid. Just don't go for that. He'll try to like catch their attention with that. So I think that is kind of, by design, that he wants them to just guard, just use your length, use your athleticism, and, don't always try to make the hero play.
Yeah. And he even addressed it the other night that they're not a ball denial team. So I just think that's interesting, because it does look like whenever you're denying the ball and you're pressuring your guy up on the perimeter, like it looks like you're working much harder, but it doesn't always make you a better defense to do that.
Yeah.
And they also hedged a lot more on the pick and roll. I mean,
they barely do that at all now.
Yeah.
They were more of a trapping hedge team.
Yep.
Which I thought, Billy Donovan really didn't get credit for this, but the first Warriors game that they played, they went back to that, and I thought it was really effective. They trapped and hedged Steph Curry. It was really just Steph Curry that they did it to.
Yep.
And they, forced the ball out of his hands. Curry made some really nice plays. They kind of, I wouldn't say neutralized him as a shooter and scorer, but they just got the ball out of his hands. So I think Donovan obviously showed that he was, it's not like he just said, okay, this is our system, this is how we play. He had an adjustment for that game, and I think it worked reasonably effectively. But yeah, they are more of a drop back team now. The guards are supposed to get over the screen. They're supposed to recover on it. The big man drops, and there's less help and rotate now than there used to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that stuck out to me was Enes Kanter's hedge percentage was at a little over 11 last season. He's down under one, or he's under two at like 1.83.
Yeah, which makes so much sense. I mean, yeah. I think that's one of the big reasons they might have made this change. Donovan watched a ton of tape on him over the summer. But it doesn't make a lot of sense to have Enes Kanter, who's one of the most slow-footed defenders in the league, to jump out there and then try to run back and recover to his man.
Yeah,
that just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, let's talk about that. A lot of people have really been impressed with his play, and they should be. He's been incredible. Among his core cheerleaders are Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Enes Kanter? Should he be taking some of Serge Ibaka's minutes? That's been kind of a topic as of late. And should he be getting more than his token, 20 to 22 minutes a game?
That's a tough question, because I think that we can fall into, I don't want this to sound like I'm bashing on Kanter, but you can fall into the idea of look at these stats he's put up. You know, yep. It's like, okay, he put up 16 and 12 in 21 minutes. So therefore that translates into he needs to play 32 minutes. Because if you do that, then he's going to have 24 and 16. I mean, so like, I don't think that that's necessarily fair to do. Has Serge Ibaka been as good as this season as he has in past years? No, he hasn't been. I think that Serge Ibaka has been, he's been fine. I think that the idea that you move Cantor into more of a role to play for Ibaka, I don't know. That just didn't. I don't know that the Adams Cantor front line is that sustainable in the way that the Ibaka Adams front line is. And I might prefer Cantor Durant small ball more than I prefer Ibaka Durant small ball. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much. I mean, we haven't seen that a ton. We've seen it more lately. And I do think that it certainly has its benefits, especially when you have Westbrook on the floor with him. I mean, because that's just so much offense. But I mean, in terms of Enes Kanter, he's absolutely a sixth man of the year candidate. You look at his per minute numbers; they're just astronomically high. I think his defensive rating over the during this win streak, or maybe the last 10 games, it's like right at 99, maybe. I think it's something like that. So, you know, that is a little bit of a small window to necessarily draw conclusions on, but everybody can see it. If you talk to anybody around the league, everybody says it, that his defense has clearly improved. You know, it's probably gone from an F to like a C minus or something. Mm-hmm. Which to me is like, look around the league at other players similar to him. You know, there's been a story built around him and his defense.
Yep.
Look around like other players in the league that, you know, are effective at doing something. And, you know, they've built a reputation off of it. And Enes Kanter, you know, he's a, I don't know, let go through the rest of the, you know, I guess we'll call him a center, you know, centers in the league. He's probably, what, the second best offensive center in basketball, maybe? I don't know, maybe third best?
Yeah, I mean, I think you put DeMarcus Cousins, and then, I mean, really, who would you put after?
I mean, I know Marc Gasol is a popular person, but isn't Enes Kanter probably a better offensive player?
He's certainly a better scorer.
Yeah, I mean, Gasol is clearly an incredible passer.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I think that
he's got to be in the top five. I mean, like Pau Gasol, like his
yeah, I guess Pau Gasol, he's
on the offensive end still. Yeah. But I mean, he's elite. I mean, there's no question about it. And you're right about his defense. I mean, last season of every center that played in the league, he had the like 10th worst points against per shot, which is really bad. And then if you like total it up to like players who actually played significant minutes, it was like he and Andrea Bargnani, and that's a really bad company to have.
Right.
This season, he's like the 27th among all these guys, and he's like hovering around like the same stats as like Omer Asik and Joakim Noah when he did play and guys like that, which is like, that's not great. But if he can do that, like, he's very playable, which is great.
Right. It's like, I mean, like, look at like players that are limited offensively in the league, or, you know, maybe not just high level offensive players. They have specific kind of roles and they kind of, you know, they do things, but they're like a really, really good defensive player that you want on the floor. And, you know, those guys like a Kent Bazemore, you know, I mean, I hate to draw, you know, Kent Bazemore or Damari Carroll or somebody like that, that like he does something really, really good, which is defense. And then offense, he's got some limitations, but he can be effective in certain situations. But like, we don't necessarily criticize those guys as much. I don't really know why. But like Kanter, it's like, oh, okay, he put up 18 and 11 last night. Who gives a crap about that? He also allowed like three layups at the rim.
Yeah. You know?
I get it. You know, the defensive numbers, and they don't always go in his favor, you know, like defensive rating on off court stuff. Mm-hmm. But you also can't ignore, you know, simple basketball stats that seem to matter. Like the scoreboard is the most important stat in basketball. And if you're scoring 18 of those points, that's kind of important. You know, I mean, I do think that this is a question, Andrew, that I think I've honestly been kind of thinking about. The Thunder don't have a big three. They haven't had a big three this season. Serge Ibaka, they have a super big two, and then they have a – but here, if they did have a big three, if we were going to try to say that they had a big three now, isn't it Kanter, Westbrook, and Durant? I mean, I think that that's the big three now, isn't it?
I think so. I was actually had that on my list of questions for you, but I think it is with the – I mean, you want it to be Ibaka, like in your – like in your imagination, it's Serge Ibaka, but he's just not that guy. And
yeah, I don't think he is right now.
Enes Kanter has definitely exceeded his expectation or our expectations for him as a player. And he's a guy that you can go to. Like, you can find him. He's going to catch the ball, and he's right. going to finish around the basket. And this is one of the things I think is most valuable, is his ability to get an offensive rebound Absolutely. In, like, the last 5 minutes of a game, which just doesn't – like, that doesn't happen.
Serge doesn't do that.
No. And, creating those extra possessions toward the end of a game, like, he has helped this team win so many games by doing that, and I don't know why people don't want to acknowledge it.
Right, like the Pacers game, I think, is the perfect example. Yes. One of the games where he really got the opportunity to close. You know, the Thunder didn't run great offense during the last, like, 6 minutes. They had their moments. They executed some, but they had two possessions that ended in bad shots. That Enes Kanter, one, he tipped it in. Another, he caught, I think, a Durant air ball and put it back in.
Yeah.
And those are empty bad possessions in a game that Enes Kanter has now saved and turned into wonderfully executed possessions because you got points on them. Yep. And he had another one where he finished a pick and roll. So he scored 6 straight points at one point in the fourth quarter. And yeah, I think that his offensive rebounding is something that, you know, when you talk about, you know, defense and giving up points, he also creates more possessions for the second best offense in basketball, yep. which I think is a pretty important thing. So yeah, should he be playing more? I think he probably should be playing more, but I think that at the heart of that is not necessarily about Enes Kanter's limitations. I think it's more about the way the team feels about Steven Adams. And yep. you know, Steven Adams is blossoming into a really, really good defensive big man, and he's becoming an even better pick and roll finisher himself. So it's like, you know, you look at it as, okay, if you play Enes Kanter 31 minutes, you've turned Steven Adams into like a 16-minute player. Do you really want that? Because Adams, you know, you look at all the numbers and they go in his favor big time. You know, he gets to play a lot of his minutes alongside Westbrook and Durant, which helps. But I don't think you necessarily want to just say either or. And I think that that's on Billy Donovan, and I think he's getting a little better feel for this. To say, okay, here's what we need tonight. Enes Kanter is going to play 28 minutes. Adams is going to play less. Okay, on this night, we need this. You know, we're going against DeMarcus Cousins or whoever, and he's going to beat us up down low. So Adams is going to get 32 minutes and Kanter's going to get 18. And I think that that's kind of the design of the roster right now, is to put it on Billy Donovan to be able to make those judgment calls on what the team needs night to night.
Yeah, and I've been saying this. I think that's one of the things that Donovan's gotten right this season, is the way that he's yeah. used these big guys. And I feel like he's scrutinized for no matter what he does. If he played Enes Kanter too much, people would gripe about that. If he doesn't play him enough, people gripe
it's,
about that.
That's what I'm saying. It's low-hanging fruit with coaches. And I know that some people can say, you know, you don't credit – you got to criticize the coach. There's reasons to criticize. There's no doubt about it. I think, you know, I didn't like it when, you know, Cameron Payne fell out of the rotation. I thought that was a bad move. I mean, there's plenty of things that you can go through and criticize.
Yep.
But like you said, Andrew, it's one of those things where, you know – earlier in the season, or really right now, people are like, what is Donovan doing with his rotations? You know, Amo's not playing. You're playing Kyle Singler. Now you're playing this guy. That was one of the biggest criticisms among Scott Brooks yep. was he doesn't adjust. He doesn't play this guy. He goes into the same game with the same rotation. He doesn't. Billy Donovan is the complete opposite. It's what is happening on the floor. Here's what we need. And so, you know, he's got 13 guys that he is willing to play. And so, like, people can't have it both ways. You know, like, some nights – Anthony Morrow is an effective player that Billy Donovan wants to throw on the floor. Some nights he's not. Some nights he uses Nick Collison. Some nights he doesn't. So, you know, I think that, yeah, you just can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Well, you talked about this, about the guys that are basically like one-way defensive players. Just watch what's going to happen on the internet when Bismack Biyombo gets whatever contract he gets this summer. People are going to rave about it like it's the best contract ever given. Even if he gets the same contract Enes Kanter got, people are going to justify it and just make love to his contract on the internet. It's going to happen.
I don't mean to criticize my peers in media, but there is something to be said. It's like this kind of like self-righteous intellectualism with basketball writers, because defense is so hard to quantify and so yeah. hard to understand that if you act like you know better about defense than other people, you put yourself on a pedestal. And so, because like we can all, like the offensive stats are there to digest. We can all look at them. We can all understand them. You know, whether it's PER, whether it's, you know, true shooting percentage, whether it's whatever it is, win shares, we can understand that. But even like any defensive stat out there, whether it's, you know, defensive RPM, whether it's, you know, whatever it may be, none of those really paint a picture for us defensively. So like it's just kind of – some of it's kind of just on you to just know and understand what good defense is. Mm-hmm. And I think that some people, like, it's almost like hipsterism in basketball to be able to say like, well, I know that that guy is good on the defensive end. And like you – so you build this little narrative around a guy that you like. And you live with that. And I think that happens with some players. And you just ignore simple basketball things that are important, like rebounding and scoring, which is what the standard does really well.
Yeah, I don't know. It's everything. Everything is swung toward defense and three-pointers. And if you're not doing those things, and if your team isn't doing those things, then you're wrong. And that's just not necessarily right. Like, there are lots of ways to win basketball games. And people are very much like, if you're not the Warriors, then you're just doing it wrong, which is just not the case.
I mean, like, it would be an interesting thing. Somebody asked me this the other night. I'm trying to remember what player they brought up to compare to Enes Kanter. About, like, you know, poll anonymous general managers. I'm going to try to remember the player now, but it actually was kind of an interesting question. But like, if you went and you polled anonymous general managers, because, you know, obviously they don't want their names out there on, you know, they're actually taken here. It was Dwight Howard. And you could say right now, you know, you could have Dwight Howard or Enes Kanter on your team. Who would you take? So the internet would say, oh, Dwight Howard, right? Like, like, if you actually are going to look at this and understand it, I think Enes Kanter might actually be the guy that you want. Now, people are probably going to freak out about that. Like, I honestly believe that if you were going to strip away all narrative and all preconceived notions here, who would you rather have on your team? And you know, add in all the other factors. Add in, you know, character and locker room chemistry. Don't just compare them as players, but add in the whole picture here.
Yeah.
Age, everything else.
Age, injury history.
Yeah. Injury history. Who would you rather have, Enes Kanter or Dwight Howard? I think that. I would say that more than half would probably go in a scanner.
I think so. Just honestly, to get rid of not to have the headache on their team, and a guy who's aging, and a guy like you want to pay Enes Kanter $16 million for the next 3 years rather than pay Dwight Howard his 30 over the next 3 years, because you don't even, like, in 2 years, like, what is Dwight Howard going to be? Like, I have no idea. Like, I'd 100% rather have Enes Kanter.
I mean, people talk about it a lot, but it is true. It's the fantasy footballing of professional sports, where you don't just plug and play. I mean, that's not the way it works. You don't just take a guy and he's not just, you know, a stat line that you can just, you know, FanDuel and just grab him and put him in your lineup, and then, you know, everything goes out the window. I mean, the human element of sports still exists and is very, very important. And chemistry is a real thing. And you know, I think that when you talk about Kanter and you talk about other players, I think people ignore that aspect of it.
Yeah. So one of the things that people are saying about Russell Westbrook is that he's not really playing to help this team win. He's just stat hunting.
That's hilarious.
Which is an unbelievable thing to say. If you actually watch him play the game of basketball, like, he has only done things to try to help this team win. Is it always the best thing in the moment? Not always.
Yeah.
But most of the time, yes, it is. He's always doing stuff to help this team. Like, how can we destroy this narrative, Royce?
Really, I think at this point, it's just like you almost got to embrace it and laugh about it. Because, I seriously had somebody the other night when Westbrook was racking up. He almost had a first half triple-double. And there was like three people that were saying to me, they're like, look at him, he's passing too much, trying to hunt for assists. And it's like, I just like threw my hands up. And it's like, I think the joke I made was like, in 3 years, people are going to be like, Russell Westbrook's playing way too much defense. Yeah. Look at him trying to stop everybody out there.
How dare he?
I mean, that's, you know, if you want to say that he's just playing for stats and playing for triple doubles, is that such a bad thing? Even when they're 15-0 when he gets one. So I don't understand. You know, you can't have it both ways. It's almost like people want Russell Westbrook to take this amazing, absurd amount of talent and physical ability that he has and pull it back.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what people are asking him to do. Why can't you rein that back and play a little more like Jose Calderon? You know what I mean? Like, what are you asking Russell Westbrook to do? Nobody says this about LeBron James. You know what people say about LeBron James? Why don't you play more like Russell Westbrook? Why don't you try to be more dominant with the ball? Why don't you try to go after people more? Why don't you try to tap in to the athleticism and ability that you have? You know, most players in the league, they're probably using, like, I don't know, 85 to 90% of their ability and athleticism every single night. Russell Westbrook is one of the very few guys that gets the full 100 every time he goes out there. And why is that a bad thing? The guy is the best creator in basketball. There's not a better creator. Russell Westbrook can get anybody an open shot anytime he wants it, almost.
Yep.
And when he's not doing that, he can go score for himself. Does he take bad shots? Sure. Does he make bad decisions with the ball? Absolutely. But he's also a high usage player that's got the ball in his hands a lot, and you're asking him to do that on a nightly basis. I don't know what people could possibly want from the guy more than what he's given you. He's playing his very best basketball right now. And honestly, I think the best is still yet to come. I think he's figuring the game out more now than he ever has. I think he sees the floor better. And him going into a little bit more of a pass-first mode, it's not like it's like he's saying, oh, I'm going to be a pure point guard and do the things that people wanted to build the narrative about 3 years ago. It's just that Westbrook understands, I can get mine when I need it. It's better for us if I work in all these other guys and then kind of go to myself when we need to. Like against the Spurs, I think the Spurs game is a perfect example of this. I think Slater had the stat. It was the first time this month that Westbrook had scored more than 25 in a game. It's not that Westbrook's scoring has necessarily gone away. It's that he's looking at it, he's reading the game and saying, okay, I got Patty Mills on me, I'm going to go score because that's the best thing for the team. That's the most efficient thing I can do. And I don't know what to say about anybody that wants to say anything. You can criticize the finer points of his game, sure. Too many three-pointers, bad decisions, forcing passes, gambling on defense, taking plays off, whatever. Criticize that all you want. Don't criticize the guy for what he's – don't criticize the big picture.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for him because I just feel like since the beginning of his career, he just can't win, like with the fan base. And I don't get that because like 29 other teams would kill to have Russell Westbrook on their team. And I just think like this guy just needs to be appreciated and loved for who he is. And I know a lot of people do that, but I'm just saying like why? Like I just don't get why. Like why are we trying to find things to criticize this guy about? I just don't understand.
This is something I keep coming back to, especially with fans of a specific team. And I'm guilty of this with my favorite teams that I watch, OU football, OU basketball, whatever it is, Chicago Cubs. Like when you watch one team almost exclusively, you see the flaws. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see the problems that a guy has. You see the bad misses. You see the bad decisions because you're watching every single game. You're not watching every single game that the Dallas Mavericks play. You know, if you watched every single game that the Los Angeles Clippers played, you'd be sitting there and you'd be going, man, why does Chris Paul do this? I mean, because you'd see it, you'd understand it. You wouldn't just have this image of Chris Paul in your head. So, like, when people complain about Russell Westbrook's defense locally, yeah, he takes plays off, he gambles, he does bad things. But you're not sitting there and you're not watching every single defensive possession of Darren Williams or Chris Paul or Damian Lillard or whoever it might be, James Harden. You know, I mean, James Harden, probably not a good example because everybody knows what he does defensively. Yeah. but when you – I mean, you build this kind of bias against your own guy because you see the flaws and you think about those and you take for granted – like Durant is a good example of this. You take for granted him scoring 20 points a game. It just becomes so standard and so commonplace. I mean, Russell Westbrook with the triple doubles, it's like, oh, Westbrook had 24, 12, and 10. Like when Kyle Lowry puts that up, people are like, oh my gosh, did you see Kyle Lowry got a triple double tonight?
Yep.
Like, oh my goodness, Kyle Lowry had 26, 12, and 10. What a game. And Westbrook does that, and people are like, ah, whatever.
Yeah.
When it becomes routine, I honestly think people just forget about that, and then they start nitpicking the other stuff because that's all they want to see now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true because you do see every little flaw, but I just would hope that they would see everything else too.
I know. Well, it's like when you talk about like trade deadline stuff. You know, people are like, man, don't you think the Thunder should go after Gerald Henderson? It's like, don't you think Gerald Henderson would be real good? And it's like, I guarantee you bring Gerald Henderson on the team, you watch him play for three straight weeks, and you see the minutes he does, and you see the bad shots that he takes and the misses, and you're going to say, man, this Gerald Henderson sucks.
Yeah.
you might have an image of Randy Foy out there, right? Like, oh, man, I remember Randy Foy hitting like six threes against the Thunder. And so you got this like picture of him. Then you bring him in and you put him on the team, and you watch him brick some threes, and you're like, man, I don't like Randy Foy.
get him out of here. I was wrong.
When you start seeing a guy all the time, it changes your perspective.
Yeah, that's very true. Do you think that they're going to sit anybody over this next nine games, even the back-to-backs or anything like that?
Well, they're not. Billy Donovan said this morning that they're not sitting anybody for tomorrow. They're definitely discussing it, and it's something that I think that they're going to consider doing. They're in kind of a little bit of a tight spot here because since they did play poorly coming out of the All-Star break, and now they're starting to play better, they kind of want to capitalize on this. They don't want to say, okay, like let's pull it back and rest up for the postseason, and then you kind of lose it all, going into that opening round. They want to be their whole thing all year long. This is something I've heard from people inside the Thunder all year long, is they just want to be peaking in April. They want to They want to hit their stride in April. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff that happens before it, people can say what they want to say, but as long as that they're finding their best basketball in late March and April, then it's going to be okay. So I think that that's kind of the catch 22 there, is that, yeah, you know, you've got the three seed virtually locked up in all sense of the word, but you don't want to start pulling everything back and now you lose the rhythm and the confidence that you've kind of built up. So I think that they will probably dial back minutes in some ways, and they may end up sitting guys, you know, kind of selectively, but I kind of doubt, I might be wrong about it, but I kind of doubt that they're going to sit Westbrook or Durant any.
Yeah. And they can kind of like quasi sit them against like the Nuggets and the Kings and the Lakers, who are three of these last nine games. Like, they probably won't play the fourth quarter if everything goes right.
It kind of might almost be like a preseason approach, you know, like you get them out there, you have them go through the regular rotations, you know, and you know, by design, you know, you're up by 22 points going into the fourth quarter and then you don't play them. I mean, I think that that's the goal. But yeah, I mean, I think that you might see them play 28 minutes instead of 36 minutes or something.
Yeah. I'll end the podcast with this. I had asked people for Twitter questions. This is from JD_Silva_. Sam Presti uses dark sorcery to manifest a draft pick for us this year, and we get Buddy Hield. Would we start him?
Oh, man. First of all,
I'll give you a platform to talk about Buddy as long as you want right now.
I love Buddy Hield. First of all, if that happened and I got to watch Buddy Hield in the NBA on a night-to-night basis, I'd probably have to throw away my press credential, because I don't think I could become – I don't think I could be even remotely effective when it comes to Buddy Hield. If Thunder got Buddy Hield, would he start? Not right away. I mean, I'm pretty sure that he wouldn't walk in. I mean, it's asking a little bit much to – and I know people would say, how dare, you know, Sam Presti and Billy Donovan, I mean, they are so stupid. But it is asking a little bit much of, you know, a team that, assuming that the whole team is back next year, Kevin Durant specifically, and that they're back to being a, you know, 55 to 60 win NBA title contending type of team, to ask a rookie to come in and start on that team is a little much.
Yeah. He is older than Steven Adams, though.
That's crazy. but, I mean, there is something to be said. I mean, That's one of the things Sam Presti loves, is young players with NBA experience. Mm-hmm. So like Buddy Hield may have age on his side, but he didn't have NBA experience. You know, Enes Kanter is 24 years old. Frank Kaminsky is the same age, or I think maybe Kanter might be 6 months older or something like that. But Kanter's played 4 years in the NBA. You know, so there's a huge advantage to that.
Yes, without a doubt. Yeah.
So, but I think eventually, you know, here's the thing. I've seen some people, like, that obviously everybody's trying to critique and find, you know, Buddy Hield's reached Buddy Mania now, where everybody's trying to, like, it's like reached the point of saturation where now they're trying to poo-poo all over Buddy Hield. And, you know, I've seen some people try to say he's going to be Jimmer Fredette. Buddy can play defense. Remember when he came in as a freshman and a sophomore at OU, that's what he did.
Yeah.
And he was a Russell Westbrook-ish player, of like, he was just kind of an athletic guy that played his butt off defensively and just had a long way to go on the offensive end. I mean, he couldn't shoot. He's just evolved into a, you know, the best scorer in the country. He's the best shooter in the country. And so once you get him into an NBA system, now is he going to walk in and is he going to score, you know, 26 points a game? I don't think so. I think his NBA future is to be, you know, an all-star role player. You know, not an all-star, but like, you know, if you in your terms of your Zach Lowe all-star role guys.
Yeah.
I think Buddy Hield could be that. I think he could be a Wes Matthews, a CJ McCollum type of guy. You're going to score you 18 points, do it efficiently, play decent defense, and, you know, just be a solid guy. But if he could land on the Thunder, he would certainly play. I mean, I think that means that Dion Waiters is gone. I mean, so would you rather have Buddy Hield or Dion Waiters? I think we all know the answer to that.
That's an easy question.
Dion, right.
Gotta go, Dion. Peace out, Buddy Hield. We'll draft you and then we'll have to trade you because we got Dion. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, Royce, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at Royce Young. Read everything at Daily Thunder and on ESPN. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast. and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review, and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.